It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In August of 2014, after hearing 15 days of testimony, U.S. District Judge Claudia Ann Wilkin issued a ruling that appeared to strike down the ideal of amateurism in college sports, stating that the NCAA could no longer prevent its member schools and conferences from offering players a limited share of the growing revenues generated from the use of their names, images, and likenesses. While the ruling was upheld last week, it's no longer clear what, if anything, the players will be paid. The Post-Gazette's Brady McCullough covered the Ed O'Bannon versus NCAA trial and joins us in studio. Brady McCullough, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. How are you?
Hey, doing great. Always great to be here.
You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at essspgh. Should college athletes receive a share of revenues generated from the use of their names, images, and likenesses? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Brady McCullough, this ruling is a bit confusing. So in order to provide some clarity for people, let's go back to the original trial, Ed O'Bannon versus the NCAA, which you covered in the summer of 2014. What was at stake in this case, and how did the judge rule?
So basically what was at stake is, as you mentioned, the basis of it is what do college athletes in major college football and basketball deserve as far as compensation? You know, is the tuition, room, and board and the chance at an education at a great university enough, or do they deserve more? You know, college sports have just blown up with TV money in the last couple decades, and even more the last decade. You know, these players are out there and kind of asking the question, is it the players or is it just the university brands that bring people to college sports? You know, could it be just any Joe Blow wearing that uniform and people would want to watch? Or is it about the talent? Is it about the players themselves and their personalities, their individuality that deserves to be rewarded? And there were a lot of those kind of dialogues going on in this court setting in the context of an antitrust case, class action antitrust case, where the nitty-gritty of it became, you know, did the NCAA and its member schools conspire to restrict trade essentially in a market of college athletes and by setting the price of their NILs, names, images, and likenesses, at the value of that, setting that price at $0. And the answer that after 15 days, the judge came up with was that, yes, the NCAA had committed antitrust violation of the Sherman Act, and her suggestion and her injunction was that they should receive the NCAA would have to at least allow a $5,000 payment for each major college football and basketball player each year in deferred payments. That say a guy was there for 4 or 5 years, he would get $20,000-$25,000 extra in a trust fund when he graduated. That was her suggestion. And it felt at the time like it was a landmark win for O'Bannon and college athletes everywhere who, many of whom leave college with not a whole lot. And then
might see years later, as Ed O'Bannon did, a video game with a guy that's wearing his number and a UCLA uniform and, you know, shooting left-handed and, oh, he's got the same skin tone. Hey, that's me. And by the way, I'm not getting paid for the use of my name and image and likeness here. So that begot the case. And it looked like, as you say, there was this landmark ruling that the players are going to be receiving compensation and that they won't be paid while they're in college, but they'll be essentially reimbursed for, you know, not just the images that go on to video games, but the likenesses or the actual images that we see on television. I mean, they're selling – commercials are being sold during these – or products are being – and advertising time is being sold during the telecasts of NCAA football and basketball. It's obviously very profitable, and they're getting none of it. So this judge thought, well, this is what's fair, right?
That's right. That's what she thought was fair. She didn't want it to, you know, even with the $5,000 per player, you're looking at, say, Pitt. That's Penn State, you know, our local schools. That's about $500,000 a year to for 98 full scholarship athletes in football and basketball.
Can the schools afford that?
Absolutely, they can afford that. That is just
I was
a drop
trying to keep
in the bucket.
Face.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so in her mind, that was still it didn't exactly create some free market or anything for college athletes. It still kind of kept the establishment sort of reasonably, you know, status quo almost when you think about how much money they're making and what $500,000 is what we're giving a year extra to these athletes. So, you know, I think what'll be interesting going forward is what will schools do as far as you hear a lot of people talk about an Olympic model. You know, maybe if you can't do the $5,000 now, why can't a truly marketable transcendent college athlete make some money off of his name himself by doing an ad or whatever he wants to do, autographs? If he is worth something, you know, the backup center or a backup offensive lineman, his name and his, you know, his face is not worth anything. But the guy who actually is the Heisman Trophy winner, you know, et cetera, those guys, well, should they be able to step out and just individually make something extra for what they're doing for the university and how much money they're bringing in?
Yes, obviously Johnny Manziel felt that way, as have others. Last Wednesday, the three judges of the Ninth Circuit who heard the NCAA's appeal upheld Judge Wilkinson's ruling that the NCAA is in violation of antitrust law. But, and here's where it gets confusing, they changed her course in one significant way. What did they do?
They basically, what they said was two of the judges, it was a two majority over the one dissent, decided that they felt the $5,000 was unnecessary and that wasn't something that should happen. They took that away and said that paying full cost of attendance, which is an extra stipend that schools are already beginning this year giving out to players, that truly covers every type of expense, not just, you know, the basics of tuition, room, board, books, but more things like what else does it take to actually be a college student? You're maybe helps out with extra food, cell phone bills, trips home. It's an extra $3,000 to $5,000 that the schools have already decided, forget O'Bannon, but because of the pressures that they're going to start doing that anyway. And then the judges have said that full cost of attendance payment is enough on its own.
So the question is, did the NCAA, which I guess they started doing this year, they announced it last year, and so it goes into effect starting this semester. So beginning in August, when these kids started arriving at school and going to their first classes of 2015-2016, the NCAA gave the larger Power Five conferences more autonomy to act as they please, and those 65 schools with more resources, and this would include the Pitts, the Penn States, the West Virginias, they have begun paying athletes an extra stipend to cover expenses that extend beyond the cost of education. And we've heard how some of these kids, they don't have the money to buy laundry detergent when they want to do their laundry or wash their clothes or whatever, that you know, food is difficult. You know, if they can afford to go buy a Subway sandwich, it's a big deal. So now this is heading off some of that. But does this decision, and you say the decision by the NCAA was made independently of the O'Bannon ruling, but I think you've pointed this out in your articles, Brady, that this was certainly in response to the increasing cry for better rights for college athletes, if not the O'Bannon case. And I find it hard to believe that some lawyer wasn't whispering in some college president's ear saying, you better do this. It's going to cost you a lot less if you do this now than if you have to pay out. You could end up paying out some big bucks in the future, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a damage control aspect to the situation. It's, you know, the pressure that started with O'Bannon in 2009 when he first filed suit, and then other lawsuits mounting that are still unsettled and will be settled or trialed in the future. That pressure led to them deciding we have to do something. And they, of course, are going to try to do the bare minimum, which is this full cost of attendance that is equivalent to any student's full cost of attendance, not just being – it's not related to them being an athlete, you know. And that's why this feels significant, because it's not – they're not – under this ruling by the appeals court, O'Bannon is not actually going to add any money to a play, what a player is getting right now. And I don't get the sense from people I've talked to that they're going to push to, like, go to the Supreme Court with this. So I think that while the judge, these appeals court judges upheld that there was an antitrust violation, and the NCAA's ideal of amateurism is not immune to antitrust law, they're not – right now they're not going to actually get anything extra than what was already happening. It's still been a landmark case because we're talking about this stuff, you know.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with Brady McCullough of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, who last year covered the Ed O'Bannon versus the NCAA trial. And now, after the NCAA has appealed, we're trying to make sense of the ruling that while the decision in favor of O'Bannon was upheld, there doesn't seem to be any money being made available to players for the use of their name, image, and likeness beyond this stipend that the NCAA agreed to allow conferences to pay out last year. So now what happens, Brady? What does this mean for athletes like Ed O'Bannon? I mean, he's clearly the NCAA and the companies that make these video games are profiting from his and the image of others. I guess Bill, you know, it goes back to the 50s. Bill Russell was a college basketball star before he went to the NCAA, and apparently his image has been used on some of this as well. So he's involved in this lawsuit. What happens to these guys?
You know, I think that for those guys, it wasn't so much that Ed O'Bannon wanted some huge paycheck, you know, out of this. I think what he wanted was that to really make an impact for current college athletes and future college athletes, that they would get more of what they earned. Ed O'Bannon won a national championship at UCLA. He was the most outstanding player of the NCAA tournament that year, I assume. I'm pretty sure that's true. He was a star transcendent player who went to the NBA, but his NBA career fizzled out because of injuries. And just, it's the NBA. You never know what's going to happen. He's selling cars in Las Vegas now, and he makes a good living, and he's happy with his life. You know, I think for those guys, it was more about trying to make sure that the future was better. And for them, I think Ed O'Bannon feels very proud about what's occurred. But I think he's also worried that with this latest ruling that the NCAA might be able to wiggle out of some of these things and might be able to still live on the crutch of this idea that amateurism and players not being paid, this idea that's sort of absurd when you think about what guys are getting under the table, et cetera, that idea is what makes college sports marketable to the consumer and special to the consumer. And that's what we don't know. But my feeling is that people are going to watch college sports religiously, whether or not those 98 student athletes, oh, I hate that word, athletes, are getting $5,000 extra a year.
Well, we certainly saw that with the Olympics. And by the way, we'd like to hear what you think. Should college athletes be compensated for the use of their names, images, and likenesses? 412-246-2002 if you want to join our discussion with Brady McCullough of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, who's been covering this. The Olympics, I mean, you used to hear this, you know, what would the gods think if we started paying athletes? This whole Olympic ideals built on amateurism, and if we pay out $1, the whole Olympic ideal and the flame will go out, and da 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 da. And obviously that hasn't happened. The athletes are getting paid. You know, certainly the Soviet athletes were cheating before. You know, they had them in the military and they were being paid to play sports, and so that's how they got around it. And obviously the U.S. was upset about this, felt it was unfair, pointed it out, and now they've lifted all the restrictions on amateurism. I mean, poor Jim Thorpe, who set all the records, which fortunately have been restored, had all of his records stricken from the 1912 Stockholm games because he was paid a few dollars to play semi-pro baseball, and now these men and ladies can go off and get and do ads and there's money, whether it's set aside for them later or not, they're getting paid and compensated. So certainly college sports is not going to collapse from this, is it, Brady?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I think when I went to the Michigan football game with my wonderful girlfriend a couple weeks ago to cheer my alma mater, I wasn't sitting there going, boy, I'm sure glad that these guys are just students and that they go to class and that's just as important to them as their athletics. You know, I don't think that's why people are going to the games. And I think that it honestly is a college sports fan. If you're being real, there's a little dirty feeling sometimes when you think about all the money these kids are making for the school, and they're not getting any of it. And what if your star player gets injured and he's unable to play anymore? Then, you know, there's just a lot of conflict, I think, and I would love to see them have a guaranteed amount that they get, and I would love to see the stars be able to get a little extra for being stars.
And maybe they would stay in school longer and you wouldn't have to worry about them leaving early to go to the pros.
Sure.
Let's take a call. We have AJ in South Park. AJ, is this AJ Burnett? Probably
not AJ Burnett.
Okay. Hi, AJ.
I wish.
Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Clearly, it's not a sarcasm-free zone here, but go ahead with your comment or question.
I was wondering if schools are at some point forced to pay athletes, is there any benefit or is there any, you know, effect on college tuition for other students? Could it increase tuition? You know, can that money instead benefit the school in some way?
I would think if it's a bigger school that it wouldn't affect the tuition. Obviously, if you get, and when we're talking about the top, what is it, the top 65 schools here with more resources, that as Brady said earlier, you know, it's a drop in the bucket for them to pay this.
I will say that's a good question, and one of the things that was discussed at the Ed O'Bannon trial was, you know, where a lot of these schools, even the 65 that have more more resources, the Power Five schools, even them, there are plenty of schools that are being subsidized. Their athletic departments are in some way being subsidized by university money. So it isn't, there are a lot of these athletic departments that in trying to keep up with the, you know, the Floridas and the Michigans and the Ohio States and the Notre Dames, when you're Iowa State or Kansas or you're considered a Power Five school, a lot of these athletic departments are being subsidized from the university already. That's something universities are willing to do because of how much recognition and brand recognition they get from having Division I big-time athletics and being associated with these huge events. You know, so I think that's something that wouldn't directly affect tuition and that whole situation, because universities are already willing to subsidize some of their athletic departments.
So what was the opinion of the dissenting judge in this case? I guess there were three judges that heard this appeal by the NCAA. And what did the dissenting judge say? And the judge who dissented on the, I believe it was regarding the 5,000 payout.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, regarding the 5,000. The judge that dissented felt that they should have, the two majority judges, should have been kind of going back to the original thing I mentioned about how does amateurism truly affect consumer demand for the product? Is that what they would call an antitrust law? The ideals of amateurism, is that a pro-competitive benefit that is valid in an antitrust court because it's needed for the consumers to be interested in the product? He felt like that should have been addressed. He felt like that was adequately addressed, as I believe it was being at the trial, that there's no evidence whatsoever to suggest that these players not getting paid for their NILs has anything to do with whether or not people are going to love and pay for college sports. And that was his main argument as to why the 5,000 was reasonable based on evidence brought forth in the original trial.
So we're down to just a few seconds, but what happens now?
What happens now is, you know, I think that, like I said, I don't think an appeal will happen from the O'Bannon side. I think they technically won the case. It's more now these future litigation, and there's a couple going right now, one of which I believe it's Jenkins versus the NCAA, is much broader than this NIL thing. And they have one of the top attorneys in these situations in the country. I believe his name's Jeffrey Kessler, but I know it's Kessler, representing Jenkins and the class that they're trying to get certified. That's basically Kessler wants a true free market for college athletes. And they're obviously, it's an antitrust, another antitrust case that's going to be heard in the same court in Oakland, California, the Ninth Circuit. So that's why there's a lot of questions of what this appeal and what these two judges decided against the dissenter and their view of amateurism is kind of being upheld in some way as a part of the legitimate part of their business model. How that's going to affect Kessler and other cases going forward who are going to keep picking at that amateurism thing is not being a crutch that's valid for the NCAA.
Well, we'll certainly follow what happens, and I imagine you'll be covering it at some point in the future as you have the Ed O'Bannon versus NCAA trial and the appeal. The Post-Gazette's Brady McCullough joining us in studio. Brady, thanks so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Coming up, this month marks the 100th anniversary of the birth of the Steel City's film industry. Pop culture contributor Joe Woes enlightens us on the beginnings of Pittsburgh's connection to Hollywood. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.